Getting a college degree is one thing. Doing it without a pile of debt is another.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Today at the White House, about 100 college presidents will meet with President Obama to discuss ways they can enroll more low-income minority students. The goal is to help them graduate on time with little student loan debt. From the Higher Education Desk at WGBH in Boston, Kirk Carapeza reports on one group who's taking a hands-on approach.
So we have to edit your Endicott essay, right?
Here at a youth organization in Boston's Jamaica Plain neighborhood, senior Joletis Gonzalez is getting help from her mentor as she wraps up her college applications.
She's the one, she's like, texts me, do this, do that, have you talked to this person, have you talked to that person? So it's very good.
And that's what many first-generation students need, a mentor to help write college essays and fill out financial aid forms. Molly Corbett-Broad says it's one of many ideas expected to come up at the White House today. She's president of the American Council on Education, but Broad is very skeptical about President Obama's plan to have the government link minority graduation rates to the amount of federal financial aid colleges get.
It is very hard for us to imagine that there would be a handful of metrics that could then be used to rank institutions.
Still, Broad says today's meeting is not just a dog and pony show. College presidents will spend the entire day at the White House discussing how to get more low-income students to graduation day. In Boston, I'm Kirk Carapeza for Marketplace.
From Europe this morning, news that new car registrations picked up as 2013 drew to a close, but that rally was not enough to lift overall car and truck sales in 2013 up. In fact, they declined over the last year, 1.7%. Tonight, the Atlanta Hawks are set to face the Brooklyn Nets in London. Yes, England, the second of two international games the NBA will play overseas this season. That's on top of 8 preseason games in 7 countries last fall. Yes, league officials have made it clear they want to spread the brand. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein looks into whether the NBA can pull it off.
University of Pennsylvania business professor Scott Rosner says it's easy to understand why the NBA wants to go international.
There's a lot of money to be made.
Thanks to the Olympics and international players like Yao Ming, Luol Deng, and Tony Parker, the sport has carved out a loyal following around the globe. Today, the NBA brings in about $5 billion a year in revenue. Rosner says establishing a handful of Europeans, say, could grow that pie.
Just do the math on it. I mean, if you figure 5 franchises, $200 million a year in revenue, yeah, it's a billion-dollar proposition.
That's a long way off.
Charles Grantham is former executive director of the NBA Players Union. Grantham says to expand, the league has to figure out how to minimize the wear and tear on athletes from so much travel and whether foreign cities can support an NBA team.
You know, you're talking about considerable investment of time and money. You're looking at developing arenas and marketing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Grantham says what the NBA can't afford is to launch a European division of teams only to see it fold. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
I wrote a book once about what people do with a windfall. What about entire states? As part of the U.S. economy rebound, some state and local governments are beginning to find themselves in the position of needing to think about what to do with the extra money coming in from taxes. Marketplace's economics guy Chris Farrell has been considering this. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, David.
Now, some of our listeners may not be old enough to have ever heard this term when it comes to state and local budgets. The word is surplus, S-U-R-P-L-U-S. That's when more tax and other revenues come in than is needed for a budget. Are you seeing evidence of this?
There is evidence of it, and the evidence is California. California has gone from a massive deficit to a surplus. And when you look around at state governments, more and more state governments are doing better. For the past 15 quarters, year over year, we have seen, according to the Rockefeller Institute, tax collections are up. I think this is one of the underappreciated positives in our economy right now.
So it may not just be that things are getting better, but it might be a sign of better things to come.
That's right. Well, you remember back covering when all the state governments were cutting and they were laying off people, and a lot of that cutting offset the fiscal stimulus that was coming from the federal government. Now we're going through a period of time, and okay, you have to take a little bit of a Martian perspective, but, you know, the federal fiscal situation's kind of stabilizing, less of a negative on the economy right now. And so to me, what that suggests is we're going to see increased spending in education, increased spending in infrastructure, maybe some tax cuts, and this sets off a virtuous cycle helping to support the economy, which means more people might get employed. And again, it's a positive for 2014.
But that is a particularly fascinating discussion, is how you use a surplus. I remember a number of decades ago, and Californians will remember this, the time the government sent little checks back to each taxpayer because there was a surplus. Yeah. Mine showed up for about $214. I probably bought gasoline with it. I don't even think I bought a camera lens. It was something. I'm not sure how much that really contributed to the economy. But the governor of New York, even now, is talking about cutting taxes with any extra.
Right. He wants to cut taxes. Then you look at Governor Brown. You know, he's increasing spending in welfare and education and health services, but really he has a fiscally conservative budget. You know, what's the mix? Infrastructure, education, cutting taxes. This is back to governing and deciding where are you going to put some of this money.
Chris Farrell keeps a close eye on economics for Marketplace. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And before we go, let's paint a little picture of one merger and acquisition story in the news this morning. Imagine the presumably fancy, perhaps mahogany-lined boardroom at a big private equity firm. Men and women in maybe $4,000 suits, all talking earnestly about Chuck E. Cheese. An entity connected to Apollo Global Management is buying Chuck E. Cheese's parent company for $950 million. Chuck E. Cheese, the restaurant chain with pizza, high-pitched laughter, and sometimes tears. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.